There is a snow day in our nation's capital, but AgriTalk is up and running with the first show of 2022. And we've got big plans. The president's top ag advisors will be meeting today to discuss meat issues, and we've got a preview of what's coming. And, of course, we'll get an update on the red-hot machinery market.
Live from broadcast day one, 2020 also, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Bharat Ramamurthy, the Deputy Director of the National Economic Council. Then it's on to Representative Rodney Davis from Illinois. Later, Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson. Right after the news, a weather update from Kirk Hinz at BAMWX. I'm
Handsome Newsman
Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Yeah, thank you, brother. Happy New Year, man. Obviously, you survived it.
So far. Yes. I trust you had a lovely and exciting celebration.
Absolutely.
Of the calendar flip. Did you?
Absolutely, we did. I actually made it to midnight.
Attaboy. Wow.
Yeah, no, we had a small yet very fun gathering on New Year's Eve, and then it was off to see the grandkids for a couple of days.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Exciting stuff.
Absolutely.
I was up till midnight knitting scarves for the needy myself. That's what I did.
Wow.
And actually what I did this year, rather than like doing individual ones, I just made one really long one.
Long one, yeah.
And I figure they can cut it to size, you know, when I get it for them.
That is so thoughtful.
I'm a helper.
It's like,
is what I am, like
pulling off a piece of tape, right?
Yeah, exactly. You never know quite the size of a piece of adhesive
tape. Until you're there.
That's
right. The conversation with Representative Rodney Davis this morning, I've already had it, put it on tape, and actually, you don't put anything on tape anymore, do you? But we recorded it earlier this morning, and I tell you what, the House may be off, but the members of the House of Representatives are going to be paying very, very close attention to what happens in the Senate as the conversations over Build Back Better and with Senator Manchin continue this week. So the people that thought Build Back Better was dead, not dead. There's going to be a lot of discussion on it. All right, man, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Chip, China joined U.S. allies, including Japan and Australia, in a new Asia-Pacific trade agreement that launched Saturday with the U.S. watching from the sidelines. The new Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, or RCEP, will eventually eliminate more than 90% of tariffs on commerce among its 15 member countries in what economists say will be a boon to trade in the region, Chip.
Can you believe that Australia is included in that? China and Australia have been finding new ways to not like each other in the last 12 to 24 months. And yet, here they are. They've got this new trade agreement that's going to tighten the relationship there.
President Biden, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack, and Attorney General Merrick Garland this afternoon will announce the Biden-Harris administration's action plan for a fairer, more competitive, and more resilient meat and poultry supply chain. The announcement will take place during an online meeting that the White House said will be held with family and independent farmers and ranchers to discuss the administration's work to boost competition and reduce prices in the meat processing industry. Chip, antitrust actions remain in focus, and agriculture remains one of the focal points for the Biden administration on that front.
Yeah, we'll get a preview of what is going to be discussed in that meeting from Ramamurthy, the deputy director of the National Economic Council, coming up in the next segment. Looking forward to that conversation.
And as you mentioned earlier, odds are rising of a potential scaled-back version of the Build Back Better plan. Centrist Senator Joe Manchin says he's concerned about the inflationary effects of so much government spending, but has continued to confer with senior White House officials over the holidays. More information should surface after Senate leadership meet tonight, with Manchin reportedly in attendance.
Yeah, it's going to be a hot topic of conversation this week.
The first OPEC Plus meeting of the year takes place Tuesday, with Saudi Arabia and other participants mostly positive on the outlook for oil demand recovery. The producer alliance is expected to push ahead with a planned 400,000 barrel per day production increase in February. However, Chip, airline snafus could get in the way of that outlook for oil demand recovery. Air travelers encountered more than 2,400 canceled flights in the U.S. on Sunday and more than 5,700 delays. A heavy snowstorm across large parts of the country is expected to cause major travel disruptions, according to the National Weather Service. Some of the biggest trouble spots for travelers were in the Midwest. 55% of flights scheduled to leave from Midway Airport in Chicago and 45% of flights out of O'Hare were canceled.
Yeah, there's still a lot of unsnarling to do in the flight schedules, no question.
USDA opens the week and new year with reports outlining demand for corn to be made into ethanol and soybean crush data. Demand on both fronts have been strong, and the expectations are that could continue in the monthly data covering November.
I think those reports are still going to be released today. I'm not exactly sure on it, but they've got the snow day in D.C.
Well, January 1 brought a new set of regulations for mandatory genetic engineered labeling on finished products, requiring food managers, importers, and other entities that label foods for retail sale to disclose information. And Tesla reports 87% growth in annual vehicle deliveries. The electric vehicle maker's expansion comes despite parts shortages and other logistical problems that have hamstrung the global auto industry. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Kirk Hinds, BAMWX.com. Happy New Year, Kirk. It's good to talk with you again.
Likewise, guys. Happy New Year.
All right. So what's it? I mean, these markets have been all over the place. Soybeans as much as 30 cents higher in the overnight and this morning, backing well off now. Corn was trading moderately higher, backing off, trading a little bit lower right now. It's got to have something to do with the South American weather forecast, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%, probably almost all of it. I think what the market is, again, not being a full expert on the ups and downs, but just in terms of the weather, is trying to determine in terms of middle part of January, how wet is that potential going to be in some of these driest areas, and how long can a timely rain happen? Now, there is a chance, and I mentioned this in the video this morning, you know, between the 15th and 20th of a 3 to 5 day window in there in some of those driest areas of a rain. But the question is, how long, what's the longevity of that? It looks rather short. Right. And then, you know, over the next 4 to 6 weeks with just, you know, one or two rains in there, how impactful is that going to be? So that's what everybody I think is trying to determine going forward. The next 10 to 14 days, however, that warm, that dry overall look is going to hold steady.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's for Southern Brazil. What about Argentina? Because corn traders are going to be worried about Argentina.
Yeah, I think the further south that you go into Uruguay, into Argentina, there's a higher risk for drier and warmer to kind of linger there longer. That's what's kind of the stronger La Nina influences is. So a lesser potential to get that timely rain in that central Argentinian cropland versus southern Brazil, I would say. So on the lesser end potential for that timely rain.
Yeah, you know, and that could be part of the reason that the soybean meal market is showing as much strength as it is here this morning, too, with Argentina being a product exporter. Cold temperatures here in the middle of the country in the U.S., right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be one of our coldest weeks on average, probably winter to date.
Yeah. All right, Kirk. Hey, it's good to talk with you again, my friend. Thank you so much.
Awesome, guys. Have a great week.
All right. That is Kirk Hinds from BAMWX.com. Coming up next, conversation with Bharat Ramamurthy. He is the Deputy Director of the National Economic Council right here on AgriTalk.
Shane Repeat here, folks. This segment of AgriTalk brought to you by our friends at Dakota Ag Innovations, makers of Dakota Shine, the best way I've seen to fix faded paint. Go to dakotashine.com or call 888-996-7801.
Yeah, big thanks to the guys at Dakota Shine, but we are going to have to wait until the end of the show to get the update from Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, because we're making some time here for to get an update on what is going to be happening in D.C. today. Still awaiting the call from Bharat Ramamurthy, and we're expecting that will be coming in very quickly.
What so we had time. I could have sung along with the Timberlake.
Yeah.
thing.
Right, you could have.
I was compelled, but I was like, no, shape it up. We got, you know, we got a big shot coming on here.
Right.
I shaped it up for no reason?
I think it's okay. It's all right, man. Okay? You're fine. You're fine. Don't
I'm just trying
sweat
to help.
It.
I'm just
trying
to make the best darn radio that we can in 2022. You know, that's my goal.
That's right. You know, it's already been 6 months ago, Davis, mm-hmm. that President Biden signed an executive order on promoting competition in the American economy mm-hmm. to create a fairer, more resilient, and I'm quoting, and more dynamic economy. Part of that was an effort to bring together farmers, ranchers, independent processors from across the country to hear from them and to announce what the Biden-Harris administration action plan is for that fairer, more competitive, and more resilient meat and poultry supply chain. So we're going to be talking about that here in just a bit. But the action plan contains four core strategies. Okay. Now, I don't have them in the same order as what the Biden administration does because I've been moving them around based on what I hear from AgriTalk listeners and pro farmer members on what might be more important on the list. But just looking at their fact sheet and moving and going in the order that the Biden-Harris administration is looking at it, dedicating $1 billion in American Rescue Plan funds for expansion of independent processing capacity. Dude, we talk about that all the time. The need for more processing capacity, and mm-hmm. $1 billion is not an insignificant investment in that. If it was a private investment, we'd be mm-hmm. kind of in awe over that big of an investment in the processing industry. The intent of the funding is to expand independent processing capacity. You know, we have talked about that. We have talked about that before, and it's an important piece of the puzzle. So expand independent processing capacity, support workers and the independent processors industry. Talking about the independents now. We are looking at an effort to issue new, stronger rules under the Packers and Stockyards Act. I'm telling you. That is one that is way up the priority list and where I want to start in the conversation here. Issue new product of the USA labeling rules so that consumers can better understand where their meat comes from. Again, another very, very high on the priority list for AgriTalk listeners here. Let's get to the conversation right now with Bharat Ramamurthy. He is the Deputy Director of the National Economic Council. Happy New Year, Bharat, and welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
Hey, Happy New Year to you and your listeners. Thanks for having me on.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, I want to start with something that's further down the list on the fact sheet, and that is the effort to issue new, stronger rules under the Packers and Stockyard Act. It's a law that's designed to combat abuses by meat packers and processors. What does that look like, Bharat? What are these new, stronger rules?
Well, they're still in process of being finalized, but as you know, the Packers and Stockyards Act says, kind of in general language, you're not allowed to do unfair and abusive and discriminatory practices. You can't do retaliation. And so what these rules are about is putting a little bit of meat on the bone about what that functionally means. And I think that without saying too much about rules that haven't been fully issued yet, you're going to see hopefully some greater transparency about in the poultry market. You're going to see stronger protections against discrimination and against retaliation. And somewhat technical issue, but mm-hmm. but most importantly, a rule that says that individual farmers and ranchers can bring complaints about a lack of competition and how that's hurting them, that you don't have to prove that competition is a market-wide problem, which is a hurdle for folks to get over. So the bottom line there is that there should be more transparency, more upfront disclosure for farmers and ranchers. You will have stronger protections against discrimination and retaliation. and hopefully a greater ability to bring and win claims under the law.
Well, it, as a matter of fact, today a new reporting process is going to be announced, isn't it?
That's right. So, what, you know, one of the things that will be announced at today's event is a joint effort by the USDA and Department of Justice to have a single one-stop shop for filing complaints from farmers and ranchers. One of the issues that we've had in the past is that the Department of Justice is responsible for enforcing some of these laws. The USDA is responsible for enforcing other parts of it. You know, folks don't know where they're supposed to go to file complaints, and the two agencies may not have done the greatest job talking to each other and sharing information.
Right.
That is changing under this administration. There, from the beginning, has been much better coordination between the agencies, and today's announcement is just the next step in that. There'll be a one website where you can file a complaint, and both the Department of Justice and the USDA will both see that, and then they'll be able to talk to each other about who's better positioned to handle that complaint and act on it.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. I think you're going to win a lot of fans with this one. Issue a new product of the USA labeling rules. Because the way things stand right now, it's a bit confusing for consumers out there, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. This is both about protecting ranchers and about protecting American. Look, you know, if somebody buys something that says product of the USA, I think their assumption is that, you know, that product was raised here. But as you know, under current rules, a product can be raised in some other country and brought here to be processed, and you can slap a product of the USA label on it. You know, that's not fair, I think, to our ranchers. It's not fair for American consumers who deserve more transparency about what they're buying. So, you know, we're going to try and fix that in the very short term. That's one of the announcements today.
Okay. In the fact sheet, it also says the Biden-Harris administration is encouraged to see the bipartisan legislation that has been presented by in the Senate by Senators Grassley, Fisher, Tester, Wyden, and in the House of Representatives by Axne and Feenstra, both of those representatives from Iowa. This is that Market Transparency Act. Is the White House putting full support behind that?
Well, look, I think that there are ongoing discussions in both the House and the Senate, starting from that very good bipartisan proposals.
Okay.
We are eager to take action on this front. The USDA is engaged with those offices and with the committee chairman in both the House and the Senate on action in this space. What we would like to see is something on the president's desk that brings more transparency to these markets. And again, we are very, very encouraged that we are starting from a very good foundation with strong bipartisan proposals in both houses that I think gets us a lot of the way there.
Okay. $1 billion in American Rescue Plan funds are being committed to the expansion of independent processing capacity. That's a nice infusion of cash for the independent processors.
Yeah, exactly. Look, a lot of that money is going to go to help folks who are just starting out and need a little bit of startup money to get off the ground and create new processing alternatives. There's also money for loan guarantees that will help small but established folks expand their operations. And we know that this is an area where there are a lot of important rules to follow, right, on health and safety, on worker safety, and it can be costly and time-consuming to follow those rules. We want folks to follow those rules, but we also want to help the smaller folks out with some of the costs that brings to them. So about $100 billion worth of that $1 billion is going to go to help, you know, build a pipeline of well-trained workers, support workplaces.
Oh, I think we might have just lost.
Did we lose
might
him?
Have just lost him.
I think he's on the
okay.
line.
Yeah, I think we just lost him, but that's okay. We're coming right up on the end of the time anyway. That was Bharat Ramamurthy. He is the deputy director of the National Economic Council. Another one that is included in the $1 billion. $32 million of that $1 billion will be dedicated to grants to 167 existing meat and poultry processing facilities to help them become federally inspected to give them a bigger market for the products that they've got out there. I think that's a very important piece of the puzzle that we need. Thank you so much to Bharat. We've got Representative Davis from Illinois up next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Well, Brian Grady, Pro Farmer editor, there's one prediction that many made at the end of 2021, and that was that the volatility will continue into 2022. And day one, they're proven right. Lots of activity in the grain markets today.
Yeah, really, a lot of volatility. Shot sharply higher with the soy complex leading us up overnight. Soy complex remains firmer, but well off the session highs, kind of retreating here mid morning. The corn market, it was higher in reaction to the soy complex strength overnight. It has now turned lower, working on bearish reversals for the day. And the wheat market, it traded firmer for much of the overnight session, but we've gotten a daytime trade and it's really given up. And that's what's pulled the corn market down, and also soybeans. And just from a technical perspective, the spring wheat market's the weakest, with a downside breakout from that choppy sideways range that it was in.
Yeah. The one market that stands out is the one that's trying to hold on the hardest to soybean meal. And it's got to be because of the dry conditions in Argentina.
Yeah, and that's what gave us the overnight price strength in the soy complex, was just generally dry and hot across northeastern Argentina and into southern Brazil, just didn't rain as much as what some anticipated going into the weekend.
Gotcha. Take us over to the livestock trade quickly.
Well, everything, relatively speaking, is pretty quiet there. Live cattle mildly weaker. Feeder cattle slightly higher in reaction to the weakness in corn now, and a mixed tone in hogs after they were firmer to start with for the day.
All right. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Floyd. Glad to be with us this morning. Our first broadcast of 2022. And joining us is Representative Rodney Davis from Illinois. Representative Davis, thank you so much for making time for us this morning. Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year to you too, Chip. And thanks for having me on. Always glad to be on AgriTalk.
I'm glad that you are here. The House is off this week. They got a snow day today in D.C., but the Senate is going to be in session this week, and I'd guess that most House members are going to be paying pretty close attention to what Senator Manchin and others. I mean, we can't just focus solely on Senator Manchin. But what is done and what is said regarding Build Back Better this week? Is that right?
Absolutely. And I think the American people have to be very concerned of whether or not this, what I call the Build Back Broke program, that includes tax increases and cost increases on every American farmer and every small business and every family, and then also the Green New Deal policies that that are being negotiated by the Democrats in that program, would be devastating to our ag economy.
Yeah. And when you say that it would be devastating to the ag economy, what exactly are we looking at on that, Congressman? Because I know that for some farm families, they look at some of the provisions in that Build Back Better and they think, you know what, that might not be all that bad, but there are other high cost, high dollar proposals in there that are just leave me scratching my head.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think every farm family has to be concerned about what are the tax increases that the Democrats are going to put into that Build Back Broke program.
Yep.
What's going to be the final negotiated amount? Is it going to impact pass-through companies that many small farmers file their taxes under? I mean, the bottom line is to try to pay for their ever-expanded Green New Deal policies, they're going to raise taxes on every American family. And frankly, it was just a few weeks ago that the IRS, even through their own data, said what we've said all along, that the majority of the Trump tax cuts that I helped implement just a few years ago, the majority of those went to middle-class families, our farm families. So we don't want to go backwards, especially with the inflationary pressures we have and coming out of the pandemic. We've got to make it more competitive, not less competitive in the American economy.
I find it interesting how you said that. We don't want to go backwards, but so much of what would take us backwards is the idea of the quote-unquote progressives in the House. I don't know how we ended up where we ended up here, Congressman. How did it happen?
Well, it's frustrating because I think the American people have seen the failures of the Democrats leading with the White House and the House and the Senate. And you're seeing it in polling. You're seeing it in the frustration in every part of the United States. And I think that's going to lead to big Republican wins come November.
Well, that is a process that's going to be very interesting to watch between now and Election Day of this year. We can say that now, of this year. So what if they do pull the child tax credit, for example, out of the BBB and run it? No, not for example. Let's stay very specific on that one, because I think this is one that farm families in particular look at and say, you know what, this doesn't feel too bad. But what if they do pull that child tax credit out of the BBB and run it through the process, debate it on its own merits? Where do you think it would end up?
Well, I think you would have a very good bipartisan debate on where we are as an economy today. We see this administration not addressing the inflationary pressures that this country is experiencing and hasn't experienced like this since the late 70s and early 80s. We also want to have a debate on the border crisis that the administration says doesn't exist. And we see it with our own eyes. We saw 11,000 people under a bridge just a few months ago in one town in Texas. We also have a violent crime crisis. So I'm always happy to debate what the Democrats are not doing to address the issues that Americans care about the most. And it's those three things.
Yeah. 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 You've nailed it pretty closely there. The priority list for most Americans out there. But back to Build Back Better, before we move on to some of those issues, what are the odds that they are going to break it up into individual proposals, plans, debate it, and try to move some of those issues through?
You know, I think it's been negotiated already. Remember, the infrastructure bill was intertwined with the Build Back Broke bill in the House. And if you start unwinding some of these provisions, like the tax cut to the wealthiest Americans that they did with the SALT, the change to the SALT provisions in the tax code, which is going to be one of the most costly provisions in that bill. If Senator Manchin doesn't like that, that bill comes back to the House. You have Democrats that made that their hill to die on, that they're not going to vote for any final piece of legislation that doesn't include it. So I think it's too intertwined together to be broken up into individual pieces, but time will tell.
Yeah. You know, you make a very good point there, and it's a point that I think I forget it from time to time, that the bill has been negotiated and it has been run through the process and it's not finding favor in the Senate. So let's figure it out from there. Okay. You've mentioned it, inflation. That's right up on the top of the priority list for most Americans right now, Congressman. Is there anything that the federal government should be doing in an effort to get it under control?
Yeah, not spending trillions of dollars like the Democrats want to continue to spend. And they say that that has no bearings on inflationary pressures. And I just got to say they're wrong. This never-ending trillion upon trillions of dollars in spending that's not related to a pandemic, that is really just left-wing liberal Green New Deal policies moving forward and tax increases on American families, is not going to help us with the inflationary pressures when families are paying more just to live, just to go to the grocery store. So I think that's the best thing that Democrats can do, is stop this spending binge. And when we take the majority back after the next election, we'll make sure it stops.
Right. Okay. The supply chain situation, to hear the Biden administration talk about it, it was last week or the week at the end of the week before, we're all okay. It feels, according to the White House, it's all systems go on the supply chain. It doesn't feel like the situation here in the middle of the country, though.
No, it's not. And no matter how many times Jen Psaki or anyone at the Biden administration says things that aren't true, it doesn't make them true. They say we don't have a supply chain crisis, and we can go into every store in America and see that there's a crisis still. We've got to do something on our end, too, to help identify what are our supply chain holdups. What have we done over the last decade to unfortunately ship overseas the production of some of our most crucial materials? And what can we do to then identify how do we incentivize manufacturers to bring those jobs back to the United States so we're never dependent upon foreign countries for some of our most precious supplies like computer chips and other high-tech type of chips and software? Those are the things that we ought to do to bring back home. And instead of talking about build back broke, let's treat it as America first when it comes to our supply chains. Identify the issues, incentivize manufacturing, and then bring those jobs back to America. We can do it, and I've got a bill that I've introduced that has bipartisan support to begin that identification process.
Okay. Tell us more about that bill.
Well, what's going to happen is that the Department of Commerce will do a study to determine what are our true supply chain issues. You know, what do we know that we need to begin producing here in America? That's the first step. And once those are identified, we've got a lot of areas in rural America where we've invested American tax dollars to build industrial parks, to incentivize manufacturing to come to rural America where we know we have a dedicated workforce. My goal would be to incentivize manufacturers to come into those areas, begin manufacturing and producing those products that we've identified that we need to bring back to America to produce. And at that point in time, if those manufacturers are able to begin producing those products and provide a certain number of jobs, get that willing workforce, then maybe we can do somewhat of a loan forgiveness program for a portion of their financing to incentivize them to bring that production and those jobs back to America.
Interesting. Interesting. Very good. We'll need to stay in contact and stay up to speed on the process and progress on that bill. What else in Illinois is happening that everybody needs to know about?
Well, in Illinois, too, our farmers are very concerned about what's happening with the renewable fuel standard. The president and the White House, they broke their promises on sticking with the renewable fuel standards. They set RVO limits a couple of years late that are going to adversely impact our producers and our farmers in the Midwest. We've got to hold the administration accountable for their promises they made during the campaign to stick with Illinois' farmers, and they're clearly not doing that now. And the RVO levels, unfortunately, for our farmers are going to be more adverse than the small refinery exemptions in the last administration. And that's something that we've got to have Republicans and Democrats standing together to fix.
Yes, excellent, excellent. Congressman, thank you so much for helping us get the year started. We appreciate you.
Thanks for having me on. You guys take care. Happy New Year.
You bet. That is Congressman Rodney Davis from Illinois. Davis and I will be back to wrap things up here in a moment. And joining us will be Greg Peterson, Machine Repeat. We've got an important update coming your way. That's next right here, AgriTalk.
In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could be with us here to get 2022 started. A couple of great conversations already in the bag here from the...
Bro, we're off to a great start.
We are. We absolutely are. Let's finish it off. Greg Peterson, Machine Repeats, joins us right now. How you doing, Greg? Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you guys.
I love the notes here that I got from you. I mean, you can't even start the new year with one item for a pick of the week. You're going to an entire auction for the pick of the week. Yeah. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it was a sale last week, guys, in Nashville, Michigan, by my good friends at Miedema Auctioneering. Retirement auction for Daryl Newton. Sid Miedema told me what a fantastic sale this was. Man, he was right. And I think it was indicative. So let's talk tractors. Three record prices were set. We'll start off with the 2017 John Deere 7210R. Low hours, 485 hours with a loader. Went for $215,000. That was $50,000 over the previous high I'd ever seen of 165 from earlier in 21. They also had a couple four-wheel drives that set records. A 2015 John Deere 9470R, 535 hours, went for $305,000. That was $27,000 over the previous record set a year and a half ago in South Dakota. And then they had a 2013 John Deere 9360R four-wheel drive, 1,126 hours, went for $250,000, and that was almost $25,000 over a record set exactly 7 years ago from Indiana. So I thought that was interesting, Chip. Three record prices, and now these aren't pre-def pre-tier four.
Right.
And definitely we've been seeing records with those for sure, all colors. But I think this showed – again, end of the year, later model, good use tractors, low hours. The demand is just, skyrocketing.
Well, and I think the other thing that it shows us is the concern over availability of the right machine for you for this spring.
No question. There were a couple other items on the sale that proved the same point. One was a sprayer, a different color, a blue one, a New Holland SP310F. 279 hours, so basically like new, almost 4 years old. That brought 340, and get this, that's the third highest auction price ever on a sprayer, but also the third highest auction price in the month of December. So it shows you how hot the used sprayer market is. Then a combine, they had a 2015 Case IH 8240, so we went green tractors, blue sprayer, red combine. This thing had 1,129 engine hours, went for $290,000. That's the sixth highest auction price ever on a Case IH 8240, but the fourth highest the past 5 weeks. So again, just crazy. And let's round it off with a planter, a 2018 John Deere 1775 NT 12 row 30 inch, 2,100 acres, went for $162,500. That's the highest 12-row 1775 I've ever seen. Of course, that's a high-speed planter. Again, the stuff just sold super high last week there in Nashville, Michigan.
Okay. Before we get to the special episode of Machinery Pete, go ahead and preview the upcoming sales because it was a test going into the end of the year, but how we carry through into the new year is going to be telling on – just how much strength is really in the market.
Right. Tons of folks, Chip, are been pinging me for 2 weeks now wondering what's going to happen when the calendar flips. And we're going to find out pretty quick. It is a little slower. It always is the first 2 weeks of January. But our friends at the Steffes Group, I know they have a really nice sale a week from tomorrow, online auction, steffesgroup.com. They have a nice Case IH STX 280 four-wheel drive from Black Duck, Minnesota for sale. And then they have six 2021 Industrious America header trailers for sale, and also five 2021 Industrious America blades for sale. So that'll be interesting. But I think the first real test will come tomorrow, Chip. Our friends at the Wendt Group in Ohio have the Miller Farm Surplus Auction in New Holland, Ohio, with some really nice equipment. I'm going to be posting a video on this shortly after the show here this morning, some nice John Deere equipment. A 9520 RX, 1,388 hours, a pair of 9510 RT track tractors, a pair of John Deere S690 combines. Wow. So check it out, folks, thewentgroup.com. We'll see how, when the calendar flips, we'll see how these prices start holding up.
Yep, could be a tone setter, no doubt about it. Okay. I did not see Machinery Pete TV on Saturday. I'm going to have to watch it on Tuesday. But this is a story that we've been watching develop and – oh, let's start it off with some feel good.
Yeah, nine seasons of doing our TV show. And again, thank you folks for watching. We appreciate it. But I think this episode was you know, the most meaningful one by far we've ever done. It was a special episode. Our great friends at Sullivan Auctioneers. Of course, everyone knows Dan Sullivan, kind of the lead auctioneer there. And Dan's son, Michael, many folks know, had been in a very difficult leukemia battle going back to September of 2020. So this episode, Dan Sullivan just walked us through what the family's year and a half has been like and let us under the hood there. Thankfully, Michael is doing well. He'd been up at the Mayo Clinic here in Rochester for a long, long period. But this episode was interesting for a couple things. One, Michael was able to get a bone marrow transplant from his sister, Grace, after they really struggled to find a match, and it really shone the light on the need. There's a national bone marrow registry called BeTheMatch.org. Yep. And Dan Sullivan, along with myself, and you know, we just encourage people to do that. You know, it's just a simple cheek swab, and then you get in this registry, and you literally, people, you can save someone's life around the world. It's just unbelievable. But the Sullivans, in out of thankfulness of the great treatment they got for Michael at Mayo Clinic, held a benefit auction late last summer. They had me down to be a speaker with John Kinzenbaugh. Unbelievable event. It was the most uplifting thing I've ever been a part of.
Yeah.
And they sold the John Deere 4020 tractor. It got sold twice, donated back. $406,000 on the 4020. All told, they donated almost $500K to the Mayo Clinic. So we do have the special episode
out
on our YouTube channel, folks, if you want to watch it. It's powerful.
What
stuff.
A story. Thanks for doing that, Greg. That's a good way to kick off the year, man.
Yeah, hopefully 2022 will be a great year for us and a little better, so we'll think positive.
Absolutely. Thank you, Greg. That is Greg Peterson, Machine Repeat. Come back this afternoon, 206 Central. Sam Hudson, Corn Belt Marketing, right here, AgriTalk.